32RIW here. Good evening, you guys. At this time, we begin the TechNet. This will be TechNet number 1520 of the series that began way back in September of 1982. As you guys have heard us say so often, the main purpose of the TechNet is to disseminate information about how all this hardware works, how to make it work better, how to understand it all. We try to give particularly new amateurs and even the older amateurs enthusiasm, encouragement, and we encourage curious questions about how does this stuff all work. The TechNet will have the first hour approximately in which we answer general questions of ham radio use, followed by John, KC2WGB, reading the mailbag from the people who don't yet have their license. Let me drop. People who don't yet have their ham license, and therefore can't talk to us directly yet, or don't have the right equipment yet, or they're beginners. And sometimes we get some darn good questions from those people. That's followed by Paul, WS2N, telling us what National Aeronautics and Space Administration is doing with his space report. Sometimes you'll also hear Hal on K6DPZ, who gives the more brief answers using his experience in ham radio, as opposed to my more verbose answers. And some people like both, so we'll see. A person signs into the TechNet by giving that group of people, including me, your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in would sound like this, K2TXB, Russ, and yes. Russ, by the way, is the guy in southern New Jersey who I've mentioned quite often that I've talked to him while driving Mobile on 2-meter sideband all the way up to Utica, New York to go to the Rome Air Development Center. I've had trouble in the past thinking of Russ's call letters and name. Okay, so give me your call letters and name right now if you do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in, just to let us know you're listening. After 32 years, this month is 32 years. After 32 years, we believe somebody is listening. Also, there's one other thing I should mention. Let me drop. John, KC2WGB, is also monitoring Echolink. So if you're listening by Echolink, and if we're not courteous enough to give enough space between those four beeps, so you get a chance to sign in, John will know that you're there because he's monitoring that website, and we'll let you know that you're trying to get through, so don't give up. We do get people from faraway places signing in by Echolink, IRLP, and so on. So, time to take those call letters and name right now if you do have a question or a comment. K2RIW listening.
K2GJE, Ed, with the lecture announcement. Over.
And N2EO with a question, Dick.
What do you mean you just listening?
K2VBN.
Okay, so the people who seem to have questions are Ed, GJE, Rich, and 2EO, and I think it's Freddie, VBN. Anyone else to check in with who does have a question or a comment? Give me a call, letters, and name right now.
QLR Delta 2, Fox Trunk, hold back here. Get the Delta.
Okay, I heard QLR Delta 2, Fox Trunk, Quebec, blank. So I missed the last letter and your name, sir. Please repeat.
Kilowatt Delta 2, Foxtrot Quebec United. The name is John, and yes, I have a question.
Very fine. We got you, John. Okay, so right now people with real questions are Ed, Rich, Freddie, and John. Anyone else with questions or... or comment, give me a call letters and name right now. K2RIW, they'll be listening. Okay, we heard Wes, and or is there anyone else?
WS2N, what is the space report, Paul?
35, Paul. Okay, we got more than enough to get going. Ed, K2GJE, tell us what you'd like to talk about tonight. K2L. You got it, Ed.
Evening, Dick. Thank you so much for letting me make these announcements. Neil Heft. Thank you so much.
Okay, I was hearing Ed on the input. He says Neil Heft. We'll be lecturing on the history of ham radio, and tell me once again at which library and the date that that takes place. Ed, go ahead.
That's the Sable Public Library, 88 Green.
Okay, that's the Sable Public Library. 88 Greenville Avenue, and this lecture on the history of ham radio. You said it, but I missed it, Ed. The date and the time of that lecture. Go right ahead.
The public library. Over.
Okay, by way of the input, we heard all that. September 20th, next Saturday, 11 a.m. And that Sable Library is 88 Green Avenue in Sable. And Neil Heff will be giving this lecture on the history of ham radio. And, boy, let's see now. I worked with Neil. For quite a few years, having trouble remembering his call letters. So run that by again, Ed. I should know Neil very well.
I don't have his call letters with me at the moment. Double RF.
KY. NY2H.
KC2KY. Thank you, NY2H. Lou, and it's the 100th anniversary of ham radio. That's part of the motivation for Neil, KC2KY, to give this lecture. Sounds like a good thing. Be there or be square. And so far, have you heard how many people are likely to be going to it? Have you been hearing a fair amount of enthusiasm? Have you announced this in more than one place, Ed? K2GJE, K2LIW.
It's been announced on the Long Island repeaters. I hope we don't get too many, that we don't have to turn anybody away, that it doesn't turn out to be like the event that Limark runs at Ham Radio University. Over.
Okay, good luck with that operation, Ed. And by the way, your position in this is that, is this sponsored by Radio Central? I know that Neil, for many years, has been a major member of the Radio Central Amateur Radio Club out there in the center of Suffolk County. I wonder if you're also a member of that club, and that's how you got involved in this one, Ed. K2GJE, K2RIW, and the TechNet.
This is sponsored by the Long Island Wireless Historical Society, which originally was set up to try and restore the Telefunken site in West Sable, but unfortunately it never proceeded. Over.
Yeah, Long Island Wireless Historical Society, quite possibly a buddy of mine named George Flanagan, W2KRM, might also be involved with that. He has lots of pictures of the Sayville site. He's collected a lot of material about the early wireless experiences on Long Island. I wonder if W2KRM is also part of this operation, Ed, in which case he's got some beautiful pictures of the actual hardware. K2GJE, K2RIW.
That's a roger, roger. George Flanagan is our historian, and he's given many talks on the different early wireless sites on Long Island. He certainly knows his stuff, mechanically and electrically. He certainly knows his stuff, and I'm sure that he will be there as well, over.
Okay. That makes this this meeting doubly interesting. If you've ever listened to George's lectures, W2KRM, George Flanagan, on the subject of SPARC and ARC radio, the very early days of radio, he has working SPARC and ARC transmitters that he has demonstrated from time to time at the Ham Radio University. He gave a very nice talk at the Ham Radio Organization at Symbol Technology out in Holtsville, Holbrooks, I should say. And so anytime George is presenting his pictures and telling you what the wild and woolly days were like with early radio, with SPARC and ARC, fascinating stuff. So, alrighty, I think I'm going to be there. Oh, wait a minute now. I know where I'm going to be next weekend. Oh, well, I'll have to send a representative. Thank you for that information, Ed. All right, the next person with a real question was Rich in 2EO. And how's your telescope search going, Rich? N2EO in Massapequa, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. Well, I'm sorry to say I really haven't done anything yet with the telescope. I want to, but just haven't done it. Part of the problem is sitting in front of it, the wheelchair. But anyway, the reason I came in here this evening, Dick. I'm going to be buying a Kenwood TS-2000, and if you're not familiar with that, it covers 160 to 10, plus 6, plus 2, plus 432. And I don't want to put up any elaborate antennas. My wife's companion does not, for whatever reason, does not like ham radio, and she wants me to keep the antennas simple, and I want to keep peace in the house. So I wanted to use a wire antenna for 8210, and I was thinking of something that is a N-fed antenna with open wire line. What are your thoughts on the subject, Dick? And by the way, I've got a piece of property here that's 80 by 100. So that's a good start.
I've had a number of, emails, five emails in the last week and a half with Joel, the man who runs the Doctor Is In section of QST Magazine. Because the answers he gave in the September issue was for a person who is running an N-fed antenna. Oh, no, wait a minute. Is it N-fed? It was a compressed antenna for 160 meters. He wanted to find out ways of using his 80-meter dipole on 160 meters. And I started writing to Joel that by N-feeding techniques, you don't need a substantial ground plane anymore. That's the good news. And resonating the right length of wire, and there's a whole lot of different right lengths of wire, to resonate them on each one of those bands. The N-fed ZEP, by the way, is ZEP really means Zeppelin. When you trail a great big long wire out of the back end of a dirigible, That antenna becomes very effective, but you're feeding an extremely high impedance. It's not being fed as a dipole. You're allowed to feed a dipole at the tip. You don't have to feed in the center. Let me drop. And you pick up certain advantages when you do that. And so I was recommending that Joel give some more further information along those lines. The problem is that modeling that is a little bit difficult because when you feed the tip of an antenna, if the antenna is full size, depending on which article you read, you're either feeding a 3,000 ohms or 7,000 ohms, but you're feeding a very large number of ohms, a very simple L network on each individual frequency, or you could make a tunable L, but out of fixed components, one inductor, one capacitor, takes your 50 ohm out of your coax cable, steps it up to the 3,000 or 7,000 ohms, and now you're feeding the tip of the dipole. And a simple ground rod in the ground is all you need for a counterpoise. That's a great advantage of that. So the reason why an article hasn't yet appeared on that is that, as I said, the modeling is a little bit difficult. I, for one, would be uncomfortable telling everybody to build this exact antenna if I hadn't yet done a proof of concept. In other words, really built that antenna. Since now you tell everybody exactly how big to make the wire, how big to make the inductor, how big to make the capacitor, how to mount it, how big a ground rod. There's a whole bunch of experiments that are really required. We've got a great concept that we can put forth, but when it comes to telling somebody exact construction, it's not there. Let me drop. So that's a good concept that's going to take off sometime in the future, in my opinion. A few people who have done it, like Mel, K2KEY, and one other fellow, I can't remember his call letters right now. There was a guy who took a pair of 27 megacycle helical wound whip antennas, put them back to back as a dipole, retuned them a little bit, made some modifications, in order to make a shrunk down 20 meter dipole. He mounted this structure in said, hanging off the balcony of his 20th floor apartment in New York City. The counterpoise was nothing but the metal railing, and the antenna worked like a charm. He didn't. He had extremely good performance, lots of DX, no RF in the shack, and he was end feeding this shrunk down dipole. I wish I knew who that was now, and maybe he'll come forward and repeat the story for us. So there's a person who has actually done it, but he hasn't yet published the article on it. Short of that, the most reliable way I can think of, Rich, is a fan dipole. By way of a fan dipole, where, let's see now, the rig does go down to 160, so you could build a dipole on each one of those bands, bringing them all to a common point. Yes, it's a significant number of wires, but with reasonable diameter of wire, people do not see wire up in the air. It's essentially a transparent antenna. That's the old reliable. The nice thing about that fan dipole is it automatically does switching. Let me drop.
Dick Rich, K2UPS, has a comment.
Very good. So there's the great advantage of monitoring Echolink. So, Rich, I visited Rich while he was operating at the field day site that is used by Lockfield Amateur Radio Club. I think it's called the West Hills Park in Huntington. It's on a piece of 300 feet of land above sea level, and operating this beautiful, simple thing that he set up from his Jeep. I visited him about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Why don't you describe that to us, Rich? And for Rich and to EO to duplicate that would be quite doable, because as I remember, it wasn't expensive hardware. So give us a description of that, Rich. And also, wow us a little bit by telling us where you are. K2 Uniform Papa Sierra Mobile, K2LIW. You got it, Rich.
Okay, Dick. Thanks, John, for putting the word out for me. K2UPS Mobile. I'm in West Virginia right now, near Elm Grove or Triadelphia. in between Ohio and Pennsylvania, sitting in a lot of heavy traffic right now. I think they're doing road work. But the antenna I was going to describe for Rich was not the one that I had on the Jeep. That was an N-Fed with a 9-to-1 unmatched to unmatched transformer at the end that I use for like 40 through 10. What I was going to suggest for Rich is the same thing that I'm going to put up at my house. Extremely low profile, and it'll work really good on 80 through 10. It's a very old antenna design called a W3EDP, Whiskey 3 Echo Delta Papa. You run coax out of the house. Once you get it to where you're going to start the antenna, you put a 4-to-1 ballon. Then you run 17 feet of 450-ohm ladder line straight vertical. You connect one leg of that vertical at the end to another 67-foot piece of wire that's running horizontal. Doesn't have to be straight. It can zig around, as you know. The other part of the vertical section you leave just unterminated at the top. And that will load up without a crazy tuner. The tuner built into the radio should probably handle that, and that is a very old design, and it works very well. Back to that. Did you copy that, Dick?
Okay, looks like we're back in operation. I copied it very well. For some reason, we had an interruption at the repeater down here. Now, 17 feet vertical, 67 feet horizontal. Sounds like an inverted L. You probably said which bands it works on, Rich. I'm going to be passing it back to you. Tell us which bands you have used it on. And Whiskey 3 Echo Delta Papa antenna is what you're describing. I am guessing that if I simply Google Whiskey 3 Echo Delta Papa and the word antenna, I will find this article that you're describing. So confirm that for me, and what bands were you using it on? K2 Uniform Papa Sierra, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick, yes, you will find articles just by typing in W3EDP into Google. You'll find tons of information about it. There's several variants on it. Sometimes they take the 17-foot piece of ladder line, and instead of using it as that way, they just use two separate wires, one 17-foot and one, I think, 67 feet, and lay the 17-foot on the ground as a counterpoise. That's not the one that I've been doing. Or using portable anyway. I run the 17 feet of 400 ohm straight up, and then horizontally I'll go another 67, and that's good for 80 through 10 meters. You will need a tuner, you know, on some bands, but you don't need a crazy tuner. It's just the FWOs aren't too bad. The 4-to-1 ballon at the bottom helps bring that into range.
Boy, that sounds good. That 4-to-1 ballon, I'm going to guess that was a, I was going to say half-wave coax. No, it wouldn't be multiple bands. I'm guessing that's a toroidal type 4-to-1 ballon, Unidella. No. Tell us a little bit about that 4-to-1 ballon. That's probably already described in the article, so maybe that's not really required. 80 to 10 meters. And I think you're saying a reasonable ranged automatic antenna tuner. I had no trouble zeroing in on this antenna and giving it a fairly good impedance match. Would you say that it probably never exceeded a 4-to-1 standing wave ratio in any band that you used it on, Rich? And did you do this at your home QTH? K2UPS in West Virginia, Mobile, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
One ballon that I was using, I think it was a W2AU, as a commercially bought one. It takes coax in on one end and has a two terminals at the top, and it was rated at 4-to-1 and the power handling. But the basic antenna tuner, most that are built into the radio is only.
Right, what's looking for?
Sounds like he's off a few KC.
Yeah, there's a failure mode that we sometimes get in the EchoLink function where it sounds like off frequency or single sideband. And that did happen that time, Rich. Stand by while we let the machine completely drop, and then I'd like you to repeat your last transmission, because 20 seconds into that last transmission, it went into that crazy mode, and so for the last 50 seconds, we didn't hear what you were saying. So let me let the machine completely drop, and then we'll start again. KQRIW. In the past that when you let the machine completely drop, all of this jazz quite often gets reset. So please repeat that last transmission. You did manage to tell us that 8210 meters, 4-1 Bowen, W2AU, commercial product. That part was pretty easy. K2UPS, West Virginia, mobile, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I got the most of the gist of that comment, and it was just describing the Bowen, that it was commercially made. I live in a basement apartment, so it's a basement. I mean, my shack is in a basement. I live in a house, but my apartment for the radio is down in the basement. So ground level to the roof of the house is 17 feet up, so that's the vertical part of the antenna, and then the horizontal part just runs across the peak of the roof and then off the other end down into some bushes. And that would be really good in Rich's case. It's very low impact as far as visual. You don't need a lot of supports. You know, fan dipole, you need a bunch of different supports, but this would get him on all the bands he's looking for with, I think, the least amount of work.
Okay, I heard KC2 WGB on the input. Not through the machine. I'm a little bit curious about that, John, where the reflection coefficient, apparently Rich was asking, on that antenna. That's, I think, a fancy way of saying what VISWR did you see, and I'm going to guess never more than 4-1 VISWR when you fed it with that 4-1 balance. That's a bunch of guesses on my part, and let me stand by first. Rich, did I misunderstand the question about reflection coefficient, which really means another way of measuring standing wave ratio? Is that what we're talking about here? KC2WGB, K2LAW.
Yes, Dick, you had asked him what the maximum he experienced. He didn't approach that question yet.
Okay, so from your memory, Rich, K2UPS, what's the highest VISWR, or the greatest reflection coefficient? Give this to us in any unit you like. What's the, on 8 through 10 meters, what's the worst match that you saw? That'll tell us a little bit about how enthusiastic a antenna tuner we need in order for this, sounds like it's more than a 5 or a 7 band antenna. K2UPS, K2RIW.
One of the pages you'll come across on the internet, if you do a search for it, does show a graph with where the antenna is resonant on the different ham bands and why that particular design works that way. I never really measured it at its high. I would just hit the tune button and it would tune up. So I never really got a numeric number to tell you. But I will say that I didn't have any trouble loading it up on the different bands in a portable situation. I still had to put it up at my home QTH, but I had used one like this in a portable situation, similar to the park, like where you saw, and it did work out well. It loaded up just fine.
Boy, I can't be any more simple. One piece of wire, one Bowen, and the automatic antenna tuner of something like a TX2000, and it looks like you've got it made, Rich. And two Echo Oscars, see if you've got any further questions, Rich. Looks like K2UPS has got a darn good solution for you. And two EO, K2LAW.
Okay, Dick, very, very good. I appreciate that. What is the call letters again? I'm on a call with that antenna.
Okay, Rich told us it is Whiskey 3, Echo, Delta, Papa. Whiskey 3, Echo, Delta, Papa. Apparently the guy has a number of antennas, but the particular one that Rich is describing is the one that he built and used it on a portable operation. Looks like he's awful happy with it. See if you need any fills on that, Rich. N2EO, K2LIW.
Oh, I got it, Dick. You said Echo Delta Papa. I will look that up in a little while. What I am going to need, I'm not doing it right now. I have to wait until some money is available and I buy the radio. I know there's a lot of people listening, and they know as of, what was it, March, I'm in a wheelchair, so... In the future, not now, but in the future, I would appreciate some help from Y-Mark members to help me get something like this up. Anyway, Dick, pick up the next station, and thank you very much, and to we help.
Hey, with Rich's help, sounds like we've got a happy customer there, John. Okay, Freddie, I think, was the next one.
Well, with semantics, put up whatever you want, Rich. Not an antenna, it's a radiator. End of problem.
Okay, there you go. Freddie, Mr. ZBN, Victor Bravo November. And I think that's the man from Far Rockaway. Freddie, if you got a question for us, fire away.
This is KB2, ZBN. I got a simple question. I never used Simplex before. So I'm going to hook up a mobile radio with 50 watts output on Simplex. Let me ask you, how far does the Simplex signal go? And does the SWRs on your radio go high? I want to know about that.
Yeah, the people who use repeaters become a little bit spoiled. If you live close enough to the repeater and you radiate 100 milliwatts, and the repeater is on a high location, radiating 70 watts, you can talk some real long distances. And when you run Simplex, or you just have somebody listen to you on the input, quite often only a couple of miles. Now the word Simplex has got a couple of different meanings here. In the case of FM modulation, yeah, Simplex usually means the guys who go to particular frequencies, like 146.52 is a very popular Simplex calling frequency. And they move off a little bit from 52 and talk to each other. And guys who do that typically do that on, I'm going to pick a number, 15 miles, 20 miles type stuff, 10 miles. The huge variable is your QTH down in the bottom of a hole? Or you're sitting up on top of a mountain. The guy on top of a mountain, K1WHS, Dave O'Lean, he can easily talk to somebody on FM on an average day 100 miles away. But he's using a big antenna and a big mountain that he just happens to have in his backyard. He carefully chose that house. So it's extremely variable. What makes a VHF Simplex rig work well are those three things. Altitude, altitude, and altitude. Call it location, location, location. Similar to the people who talk about real estate and being easily able to sell something. It's got to be located in the right place. So in the really worst case, a couple of miles. In a good case, 50 miles, quite possible. There's a lot of variables in between there. How many buildings in that direction? How much altitude? If by some means you can put your antenna up hot...
Repeater, timeout.
To repeat that, if by some means you can put your antenna up high enough, like that other significant guy there in Far Rockaway with you, Freddie, N2 Moon Bounce, if you had an antenna like that, you'd be getting some awful nice range. 50 watts is a good number. Once you're on Simplex, once you're willing to go simplex, non-repeater operation, if at some later day you acquire an all-mode rig for 2 meters, some kind of a rig capable of putting out single sideband, your range will immediately get multiplied. Does it get multiplied by 2 times or 10 times? And again, there's a lot of variables involved. The guys with a simple 2-meter Yagi on the chimney of a house on 2 meters, typical QTH, can quite frequently talk to almost all of New Jersey from Long Island, quite often get into Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Delaware, Connecticut, Rhode Island. As you can see, they get some real nice range. Sideband will give you a huge improvement over FM. It's a different class of people. The guys on sideband are a lot more experimental. If you like picking somebody's brain and talking about combinations of antennas and feed lines and transmitters and receivers and moon bounce and meteor scatter and satellite, the sideband people are the one you want to talk to. They're the guys quite often with the PhDs in ham radio. That doesn't mean they really got a PhD, but they talk like it at times. So there's another whole world. Let me drop. There's another whole world on 2 meters. The guys that hang out at around 144.200, the single sideband calling frequency. If you've got an all-mode rig and a preamplifier, because the funny thing is that almost all rigs you can get a hold of, probably even true of the TS-2000 that Rich is going to get, if you start listening in the sideband mode on 2 meters, you're going to want to add a preamplifier to lower its noise figure. Many of these rigs start off with a 10 or a 12 or a 14 dB noise figure. With a good preamplifier, you can bring it down to 1 dB. That gives you something in the vicinity of 10 or 12 decibels more sensitivity, more than doubling the range by adding this tiny little preamplifier on the receiver. So it's a bit of a learning curve of using simplex versus repeaters. But when you've got a rig that's got an antenna, you're talking to us, and you listen down there at 146.52. They're not on there all the time, but around 9 o'clock at night is the peak of activity, particularly during contest weekends. Just start listening to those simplex people, start talking to them, picking their brain, and you'll find they're a good group. So you got the repeater people, you got the non-repeater people on FM, simplex people, and you got the sideband people. I'm amazed how little those three groups talk to each other. They're three completely separate societies, even though we're on the exact same 2-meter band. You'll be kind of amazed by that one, Freddie. As you get further into this, please tell us what you find. KB2, Victor Bravo November, and Far Rocky Way, K2RAW in the second hand.
This is KB2, again. Yeah, I'm still on a simplex frequency. I'm on a groundhog level. My antenna is definitely right on the grass. So I want to reach the guys in Staten Island right across the water from me and see if I can give it a try.
Yeah, I think you'll make it. The good news is that you are, although you're down at ground level, you've got that nice body of water very close to you. And no part of Far Rockaway is very far from the water. In fact, if you live where N2MB lives, Barry, once every 5 years or so, the water comes to him. You know what I mean? His property gets flooded by anything from half an inch to a couple of feet. And during Superstorm Sandy, the water got high enough on his property, and maybe yours, that it can completely cover up a car. In fact, when I pass it back to you, Freddie, give us a couple of words as to how high did the water get? Did you stay there during Superstorm Sandy? KB2 VBN, K2RAW in the tech van.
Yes, Roger. What happened on my side of the beach? The construction guys came out with these gigantic pipes about four blocks long, big giant pipes. and I saw it. I took off when Hurricane Sandy came. I went back to my job. I stayed at my job for 7 days straight. I came back to Rockaway, and I couldn't get back. I couldn't get back to the job, so because the buses, there's no way to get out of Rockaway. So I spent the night in here, and I caught a walking pneumonia. And then in the morning, I took a dollar van over there to Jamaica, Queens. It was a miracle I got that far. And I went back to the job, and I stayed on the job until the trains and everything started working. And the water flooded my little building and everything over here a little bit, but not too bad.
I may have you confused with another person, Freddie. Are you a EMT? In other words, you do emergency service for people that need ambulance services. Is that approximately the job you're referring to? Freddie, go ahead.
I know first aid and CPR. That's about it. I work as a maintenance man over there in a commercial building.
Okay, sir. You're one of the guys that have a pretty tall set of stories as to what Hurricane Sandy was like for you. And even though I'm a long distance from the seashore, Sandy did a lot of damage on my property by knocking down a significant number of 80-foot high trees, breaking them all 15 feet above the ground. So, pretty wicked weather. Alrighty, try to get a hold of an all-mode rig. In other words, a 2-meter rig that has sideband capability. If you can borrow one from somebody, even with your antenna down low, and you do some listening, during the time that those people are active. Now, there's a catch here. Nice thing about FM is that it's channelized, people know where to meet, and at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday, you call CQ on a repeater, and there's a 60% chance you get an answer. 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday on single sideband, unless you're one of the very big guns, no. 8 o'clock at night during the popular hours, yes. So you got to listen at the right time. And particularly your sideband and simplex, they come alive a heck of a lot more during the VHF contest. And this coming weekend, for instance, is the VHF September contest. So it's something to look forward to. Come back and tell us how you find out various things as you start experimenting in this area. And it's good that you're branching out to both simplex and if you have a capability of getting the sideband, I think you're going to like it. Next person who signed in with a question was John, Kilo Delta 2, Foxtrot, Quebec, Uniform. Go right ahead, John, K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Thank you, Dick. This is Kilowatt Delta 2, Foxtrot Quebec United Mobile. My question was for a simple Yagi for portable use. Not for portable as in a car, but like handheld for HD or so forth. Would you have any ideas of a website that I can go to that might guide me into constructing a handheld antenna? Over.
Oh boy, do I. You came to the right spot. I know there's 10 websites out there, but the one you should start off with first, in my opinion, is the guy who writes the antenna article for CQ Magazine every month or every other month. I'm talking about WA5EJB, Whiskey Alpha 5, VictorJulietBravo.com. You go to that URL, Whiskey Alpha 5, VictorJulietBravo.com. His name is Kent Britton. He lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area of Texas. He's actually a tiny little town right outside of that called Grand Prairie. But you go to his website. The first page, you'll find out he's got these green-colored UHF Yagi antennas for frequencies like 432, 1296, 2 meters, 902, and so on. He's got a whole lot of these Yagi-like antennas made with printed circuit boards. You'll have to fiddle around a little bit with his website. But there is a second page of his website which shows you how to build 2-meter Yagis, 6-meter Yagis, 432 Yagis out of extremely inexpensive materials and they're very high performance antennas. Let me drop. I call these things coat hanger antennas. He literally starts off with coat hanger wire of just the right length, and the driven element is bent around into a half J-like thing. And he's got a patent on that method of feeding the driven element of a Yagi. And the boom itself is a slat of wood. And he's got designs there for 3 elements, 5 elements, 8 elements, 10 elements. Strictly a function of how big a thing you want to handle. But the guys who do this fox hunting, it's got a name, I can't think of it. It's a combination of fox hunting and mountaineering, if you know what I mean, or indirect orienteering. In other words, they're running through the woods looking for fox hunts with handheld antennas on 2 meters. Quite a few people are using that particular antenna. So WFIVJB.com, and we finally find his second page on those, I think he calls them cheap Yagis. Very high performance, very easy to build. Lots of guys have done it. There's one other website that has a beautiful Yagi. And I'll have to do a little bit of research to find this one for you. Can we drop it? And this is the Rochester, the Ra-Ra Group, Rochester Amateur Radio Association, R-I-R-A-R-A, Rochester Amateur Radio Association. In their monthly journal, about 6 months ago, they had this beautiful tape dipole. In other words, the kinds of yellow tape that you pull out of a tape measure, you know, your 10-foot and your 12-foot long tape measure that a carpenter uses. You cut off pieces of that metal, mount it to a PVC boom, and that makes a 3-element Yagi, and it's a reasonably high-performance 3-element Yagi. The Ra-Ra group brought together a bunch of their youngsters one day and built about 15 of them, and they all went out and did fox hunting with them. So what the nice thing about the tape dipole is, again, it's inexpensive materials. A piece of PVC pipe is the boom. Various ways of holding down those chunks of tape for the director, driven element, and reflector. And the nice thing about the tape is that you can fold it up. You know the way the carpenter's tape is bendable chunk of steel. It's a thin piece of steel that's bendable. And therefore, you can take this antenna, literally collapse the elements down so that they're parallel to the boom, wrap it up with rubber bands if you want to, stick it into some kind of a small container, and then get on the site and take off the rubber bands, and your antenna pops back out again. So those two designs are certainly worth considering. I probably can, with a little bit of difficulty, find you the exact website, but with some...
What is he making those for?
I think it's 2 meters. Is that true, John? Because Barry is also going to help you on this one. KD2FQU. I was guessing that it was 2 meters you're doing this on, but Barry's got a darn good question. You got it, John.
Thank you, Dick. Yes, you're correct. It's 2 meters. It's to follow up on a question I asked last week about single sideband AMUs, and I actually have a Yaesu VX6R. I'd like to test out and a couple of ICOMs that are just 2 meter straight use, and I'm interested in trying out HT with like a beam, a handheld beam antenna Yagi, or just a handheld Yagi setup. But I really do appreciate the information.
Yeah, in that order, the so-called coat hanger Yagi antennas for 2 meters out of Kent's website, WA5BJB.com, also the Radio Amateur, Rochester Amateur Radio Association, R-A-R-A, Ra-Ra, they call themselves. And so if you can get a hold of that particular issue approximately 6 months ago, in which they described the construction of that tape dipole for 2 meters, I think there's a 3-element version and a 4-element version. And so that group of amateurs with their youngsters built about 15 of those things, and they all worked. And then they went out in the woods and did the fox hunting with them. Let's see if Barry has any other suggestions along these lines. He's built a whole lot of 2-meter antennas in his night, in his day. And 2 moon bounce, K2RIW. Go ahead, Barry.
actually, you kind of caught me off guard. I'm not really prepared to answer that, but I will in about 10 minutes. I'll come back with some answers for that, because I certainly had a lot of experience in that area in 2MB.
Hey,
Judge. He says,
Eric and Hal recognized in that order. Barry has built up quite a few arrays on 2 meters and 432 and all of his moon bounce days. Eric first, KE2EJ. What do you suggest, Eric? K2LAW.
Actually, it's a little more of a curious question. Maybe it's dumb on my part, but you've built a lot of antennas built on PC boards, and I'm just wondering in terms of the three-dimensional sizes, where, you know, you're building an antenna out of 1 inch copper, you know, 1 ounce copper, how do you relate that, or do you compensate in any form for the fact that when we build a traditional Yagi, we're using, like, coat hanger wires, which is a little more dimensionality to it. Sure, WK, take care.
What Eric is referring to is he has inner knowledge about the fact that for the last 10 years, on a nearly daily basis, I was building 915 megacycle Yagis, among other kinds of antennas. All of them were built with copper tape on sheets of plastic or sheets of printed circuit board, so to speak. And it turns out that RF is reasonably blind, Eric. Ordinarily, you would think that if I built an antenna out of coat hanger wire, the wire is round. If I built it out of aluminum tubing, the aluminum tubing is round. But when you build the Yagi out of, and you build the directors, driven element and reflectors out of copper tape, and you might decide to make the copper tape element quite wide. I've made them as wide as an eighth of a wavelength wide, and there's great advantage of doing that. And you would think that the RF doesn't is going to really protest about going across a flat piece of a conductor as opposed to a round conductor. The difference is amazingly small, and it's predictable. So does it behave differently? Yes. And in general, if you're smart enough and you know how to do it, it is almost always better, because there's a huge advantage of making the parasitic and driven element of a Yagi out of wider things, larger equivalent diameter. If you're smart enough to know how to do that, you pick up a hell of a lot more bandwidth, quite a bit more efficiency, a little bit more gain, and a little bit more front-to-back ratio. It's a win-win-win-win if you know what you're doing. And it's a whole area that has not been very well investigated. The total number of articles, let me drop. The total number of articles I know about that have investigated this area is extremely small. It's a controversial area because people think that because you've made the element wide or large in diameter, it's going to be low in Q. And when it comes to a resonator, an inductor capacitor circuit as a tuning element, low in Q is undesirable. When it comes to Yagi-like antenna structures, low in Q is very desirable. Gives you much higher bandwidth and very low standing wave ratio if you know what you're doing. That's the good news. There's one piece of bad news. They're difficult to model. The currently available antenna modeling programs don't do a very good job in that area. Each of the patented antennas that I've worked on use this wide technique, if you know what I mean, where it was found empirically. In other words, by using a vector network analyzer and tuning it up on the bench, you found this great performance, which is opposite of the way commercial antenna companies work. Almost every commercial antenna company these days says the following: we model it first, then we build it. Well, I've got a whole bunch of patents on antennas that you cannot model. Therefore, those people will never find those antennas, as you can see. Hal, K60PZ, tell us about the handheld Yagis. K2RIW, you got it, Hal.
K2RIW, K60PZ. Now, what I want to do is follow a story. When you mentioned about using a carpenter's ruler antenna, many Korean War, there was a walkie-talkie after the BC-611 called the Pick 6. And it was more like a bananas type of style walkie-talkie. It worked from 40 to 70 megahertz. Well, the antenna that was used on that walkie-talkie, the government put out a bid, you get a walkie-talkie, you'd have a flexible type of antenna. Well, the company came up with the Pick 6, and they had a large amount of these carpenter ruler rulers, which they had gotten a wholesale or surplus or whatever. They made those into the antennas to be used on the Pick 6, where when you were done using the transceiver, you just took the antenna, bent it around, and put it into a little clip on the side of the Pick 6 walkie-talkie. So the rear antenna has been around for a while. Go ahead, you're K2RIW, K6DBZ.
I just took out my carpenter's ruler, Stanley brand name, and looked at the yellow tape that comes out of it. I used the ruler to measure the ruler, and yes, the tape in my case is 3/4 inch wide, and there are more heavy-duty versions of the carpenter's ruler, where I think the tape is actually as much as an inch wide. Under normal circumstances, a steel tape, stainless steel in particular, has an extremely high resistivity as a metal. It's just a little bit more conductive than nichrome, and that's what they make resistors out of, nichrome wire. So at first, if you use stainless steel as wire to make your antenna, the performance would be a bit lower because of the resistivity. Let me drop. In the case of the walkie-talkie that Hal was talking about, the most important thing that you want about that antenna is it's got to be unbreakable. You certainly wouldn't want to build an ordinary telescoping antenna that is very easy to snap it off, if you know what I mean. The nice thing about the carpenter's tape, within reason, you can bend it back on itself 1,000 times and it'll take it. So it's a very rugged antenna, and because of the width of the steel, that resistivity problem almost disappears. Very similar to what I was discussing earlier with making Yagi-like antennas out of copper tape put on sheets of plastic, thin sheets of plastic sometimes. And you can even bend them into other curved shapes, a cylindrical shape. You could make all the elements look like they're laid out on a great big long, large diameter cylinder by the way you bend the sheet of plastic that the copper tape is on. So there's a huge advantage of wide parasitic elements, wide elements in general. And when the element is wide enough, you can make it out of something just a little bit better than carbon granules, and you'll still have enough conductivity because of the width. The current density, the J field as they call it, starts getting real low, and you pick up a lot of performance, even though there are very, very few articles on this. As I said, it's a whole area that hasn't been investigated. It looks to me, Hal, like the World War II World War II walkie-talkies did go into that area. And I'm kind of disappointed that that tape-like antenna didn't become more popular. But maybe I'm naive on this one, Hal. K60PZ, K2RAW in the second half.
K60PZ. Well, that's where I've seen it mainly applied with these BRC-6 radios. They were military radio handheld. They came after the 611, and they were FM versus the 611 that was an AM walkie-talkie. Just thought I'd throw that in for a little information, because the antenna, I think, was about about half inch thick. A good half inch thick. It was very flexible, and it made out for a very good antenna that took a lot of abuse. That's all I can say about it, Dick. K2RIW, K6DBZ.
So you worked on the PRC-6. I worked on the PRC-49 at Telephonics Corporation way back in the dark ages of 1963-64. And that PRC-49 operated on the 121.5 and 243 megacycles, as I remember. I think those are the two frequencies, 121, yes, and 243, the emergency calling frequencies. This was a portable transmitter that went down with pilots. In other words, when a pilot had to bail out of an airplane, that radio went with him, allowed him to holler Mayday and